May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our God and our Redeemer. Amen. This gospel story is sandwiched right in between the two resurrection narratives of the Gospel of John. It takes place days after Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. That's why he's in Bethany and why they're hosting this meal. And about 6 days before Jesus' own passion and death, we find the characters that we already know pretty much exactly where we would expect them to be from previous stories. Lazarus is sitting at the table with Jesus as the host. Martha is serving, as she seems always want to do. And Mary is again found sitting at Jesus' feet, learning from him, just as she was in the other story. It's just a different lesson this time, and she has a bigger part in it. Right in the midst of the story of resurrection that is integral to the gospel, this story takes place, and it really is quite important. As a matter of fact, when Matthew tells this same story in his gospel, he records Jesus as saying, "I tell you the truth, wherever the gospel is told throughout the world, what she has done will be told in memory of her." He's saying that this story is fundamental to his whole message. Why? Because it's a story about love, giving and receiving love. Because you can't tell the gospel without extravagant, unending, and abundant love. And this is a picture of it. And maybe a much more apt picture for how we live our lives and interact with people around us than the picture of Jesus' love for us on the cross that very few of us will ever replicate. Mary gives us a picture of love that we can relate to. She shows up at this dinner party in front of people, sacrifices her prized bottle of perfume, and cleans Jesus' feet. She does it out of gratitude because he brought her brother back from the dead. She does it out of devotion because she thinks he is the Messiah. But mostly, she just does it out of love for a person who has come to mean so very much to her. I say that this is an image we can relate to because how many of us have ever loved a child enough, or maybe an aging parent or a spouse, to clean them when they were dirty? How many of us have ever loved another person enough to make a public display of our affection, a public pronouncement of our love, no matter who was around to see or to judge? How many of us have ever loved a friend enough to sacrifice something that was valuable to us to help them, to serve them, or simply to make them know how much they were loved? If you've never done any of those things, I'm not sure you've ever really loved anyone. But I think most of us can relate to her example here. I do wonder this, though. How many of us have ever loved Jesus this much? To sacrifice something valuable, to make our love known in the face of judgment, to care intimately for those who bear his image. I think it's a question worth asking ourselves. Does our gratitude, devotion, and love of God ever take a form that would be noteworthy, that would be undeniable, that would warrant even a footnote as an example when people are telling the story of the gospel of love? I think most people, me included, would rather show our devotion to Jesus like Martha does, serving and doing and being productive, rather than like Mary does here, with an act of true self-giving. If most of us have, in fact, loved someone in our lives like that, why is it hard for us to love Jesus like that? I don't know the answer, but I think it's a question worth asking in light of this passage. But the story goes on to show us what tends to happen in the presence of such love. Judas just can't quite accept it. It makes him uncomfortable. It makes him suspicious. Maybe it makes him feel guilty. So he tries to shut it down. He says it's a waste. There are better uses for this perfume. Couldn't we serve more people? Even though the story says that's not his real concern. He doesn't seem to understand that it is never the wrong time to show love. That it is inherent to the nature of love to be gratuitous and yet never truly wasteful. He's a voice, though, that is all too familiar in our world. Sometimes might even be the voice we have in our own heads when someone tries to love us, care for us, make some sacrifice for us that we think we don't deserve or are unworthy of. It's so common to see people who serve but cannot be served, who are eager to offer help but not be the recipient, who love deeply and profoundly but have real trouble accepting love in return. The problem with that is, one, it simply isn't the example of Jesus. And two, and maybe more importantly, it eventually limits true community. It cuts against intimacy. It puts borders around love that will necessarily limit its reach. When we do that, we eventually come to allow ourselves to think that others too do not deserve God's love. We put boundaries around it and set stipulations for love. We control love, confine it, contain it, maybe even detain it. But Jesus here is teaching an important lesson to all of those witnessing this act or hearing this story. Jesus is teaching how to receive love as well, how to accept and even encourage it because the world needs more of it, and expressing it enlivens people's own souls. If you cannot give and receive love, then you will not go out and truly love the poor. Look at the example of Judas in the story. He paid lip service to the idea, but in the end, he couldn't even accept Jesus' love for him. When we go and serve people, are we able to accept their gratitude, the gifts they offer in return, or the love that they show us as their greatest gift? When we give God our acts of devotion, are we able to experience God's love for us, God's forgiveness and grace, to feel that God is yet more devoted to each of us? Are we able to wade into a community in times of need and truly accept their concern for us, their sacrifices on our behalf as they carry us, their love as a sign that we are bound together? This is what we must do to bring about the dream that Jesus had for the world he was saving. Can we give and receive love? This is the mark of a Christian community. Jesus goes on to tell his followers that by this all people will know that you are my disciples, that you love one another. Our world is not accustomed to this sort of community, built around the giving and receiving of sacrificial love. That's why it marks us as Christ's disciples. It's why it's so important to be in a church, because this is the story that must be told, that must be experienced, for people to be able to believe that the Easter story is true. To be able to fully grasp Jesus' love for us and truly accept it, we need to have a place where we can tangibly experience that type of love. And Christ's church must be that place. The condemnatory voice of Judas, the judgmental stares of the crowd, the needs and pressures of the world around us still exist, and they are loud and persistent and trying to hold love down and keep it in its safe space. But love wins. It's a battle, sometimes an ugly fight. Sometimes, even like Jesus, you have to march through suffering and death first. But love always wins. Against greed, against social stigma, against our own doubts and discomfort, the central truth of the gospel is that God is changing the world, is recreating it through love. This story asks if we are ready to truly participate in that. It's an urgent question because Easter is coming and God longs for us to be able to accept the love of that story and respond in kind. So we must decide that we will and then prepare and be ready. Amen.